Good day, everyone, and welcome to the Center for American Progress, Fifth Circuit Hearing Recap, and DACA Survey Results Discussion Call. Today's call is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Carmel Martin, Executive Vice President at the Center for American Progress. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, Operator. Thanks to everyone for joining today's call. I'm Carmel Martin with the Center for American Progress. We've got a great lineup of speakers today to discuss the Fifth Circuit hearing in Texas versus the United States, the case considering the DACA expansion and DAPA program. These programs are on hold pending the court's review. We'll be discussing the results. We'll also be discussing the results of a new survey of DACA recipients, which not only shows that DACA is significantly improving the lives of recipients, but also shows that Texas, the lead plaintiff in the case, stands to gain significant tax revenue from the purchasing power of deferred action recipients, directly contradicting its claim of economic harm in the case before the court. But first, let me introduce our first speaker, Congressman Joaquin Castro of Texas, who, among other things, has been a key supporter of DACA and DAPA in Congress. Congressman Castro, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, and it's an honor to be on the call with you. What we're seeing today, specifically in the Fifth Circuit, is a country contending with a broken immigration system. Just to provide some context, you remember in 2013, the Senate passed comprehensive immigration reform, but Speaker Boehner blocked the measure from coming to the House floor, and the legislation died without a vote, although most suspect that at the time the Congress had the votes to pass comprehensive reform. So due to the House's inaction, President Obama announced a series of executive actions, measures that we believe are within his constitutional authority to address some of our country's most pressing immigration problems. These actions have the potential to provide relief to millions of people across America. So, for example, in my state of Texas, nearly 750,000 people are eligible for DACA, expanded DACA, or DAPA. The administration's sensible reforms increase border security, utilize our enforcement resources more responsibly, and ensure accountability in our immigration system by bringing undocumented immigrants out of the shadows to pay taxes and fees and be placed on the books. They also prioritize deportations, focusing on criminals like the individual who committed the tragic shooting in San Francisco, not non-threatening, hardworking individuals who came here to build better lives for themselves and their families. And moreover, the executive actions are good for the United States economy. A recent CAF study found that over the next 10 years, DACA combined with that expanded DACA and DAPA programs stand to result in a $230 billion increase in America's GDP, more than 28,000 jobs created annually, and an increase in the income of all Americans of $124 billion as a nation. Texas, my home state, and the state holding up implementation of expanded DACA and DAPA because of claims the actions won't help Texas, would see over that same decade a $38.3 billion increase in state GDP, 4,800 jobs created annually over the decade, and an increase in the income of all Texas residents of $17.6 billion. And those are significant numbers. And the results of the CAF survey of DACA recipients released today add to the good news. For example, the survey found that 96% of respondents are currently employed or in school, showing that DACA has significantly helped recipients participate in the labor force. 92% of those who are currently in school say that because of DACA, they pursued educational opportunities previously unavailable to them. So this has opened up avenues for people really to live up to their potential. There were so many of these DACA recipients who were essentially in limbo, locked out of the American economy, and now they're contributing to it. Nearly 70% of respondents now have higher-paying jobs than they had before they received DACA, with 57% of them reporting moving to a job that better fits their education and training, and 54% moving to a job with better working conditions. With better jobs and higher incomes comes greater spending potential, and that, of course, helps all of us. Not only are respondents better able to provide their families with the necessities of life, they're making bigger purchases, too, like cars and other more expensive goods. Taking all of this into consideration, It's clear that the President's executive actions on immigration provide much-needed relief to millions of people in America, have a positive impact on our nation's economy, and strengthen our national security. I'm hopeful that ultimately the courts will find these beneficial measures to be constitutional and will uphold them. Thank you.
Thank you, Congressman. Our next speaker is Noah Purcell. He's the Solicitor General of Washington State. Noah, along with Washington State Attorney General Bob Ferguson, has taken the lead in organizing states in support of DAPA. Noah?
Yes, yeah, thank you. I just wanted to highlight for folks on the call that Washington did take the lead on an amicus brief in support of the administration's programs. 17 states joined that amicus brief, led by our Attorney General Bob Ferguson. And the fundamental point that our states are making in that brief is that, contrary to what the plaintiff states are claiming, these programs will actually benefit states significantly. I'm not going to go through the statistics again. You just heard many of them, and there are more in the CAP study. But the bottom line is that states are benefited, not harmed, by expanding these programs, by allowing people to work legally and contribute to the economy. These programs also avoid a lot of harms that states often see, such as children having their parents deported away and coming to rely on the state, that sort of thing. So our fundamental point in the amicus brief is, again, that states are better off, not harmed, and we hope that the court will recognize that and overturn the injunction. And that's all I'll say for now, but I'm happy to take any questions at the end.
Thanks so much. Next, we have Marilena Hincopea, Executive Director of the National Immigration Law Center. Mary Elena was in the day at the Fifth Circuit and will be able to give us some insight on what happened today and what we can expect to come next.
Great. Thanks, Carmel, and thank you, everybody, for joining us. So we at the National Immigration Law Center are very excited about this research, the report that we've just issued with CAP and with Professor Tom Wong, because I think it really points to the much-needed economic research to prove that, in fact, DAPA and DACA are a benefit not just for the immigrants who will directly benefit from them, but also their U.S. citizen children and the economy at the federal and at the state level. As Carmel mentioned, I just stepped out of the court hearing just finished at the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. This was a panel of three judges that heard the arguments with respect to whether President Obama has the constitutional authority to have announced the changes, the policy directives that he announced back in November of 2014. And I must say that once again, the arguments today showed the complexity of immigration law and the questioning both by the judges as well as the arguments by the lawyer representing Texas and 25 other states really showed a tremendous lack of understanding of deferred action as well as prosecutorial discretion and, again, of the benefits that will ensue from these programs. One of the things that was also just very surreal that I think is, again, important given our research and the report that we've just issued is how this case, which is really about the ability to provide a simplified process for individuals who are in the United States to come forward voluntarily to, if they meet certain criteria, to apply for deferred action and to receive temporary reprieve from deportation for 3 years with work authorization if they can show their economic necessity. But today's hearing focused almost exclusively on driver's licenses. And our research, our report shows that, in fact, 89% of DACA recipients obtained a driver's license or a state ID, and that 21% of DACA recipients bought their first car. The benefits that come with that completely outweigh any cost that Texas is referring to, and we believe that this nationwide injunction really should be limited only to the state of Texas and the 26 states that are suing, or preferably completely be thrown out and allow the administration to go forward with implementation. At the hearing as well, I would just point to a moment of clarity when Judge King noted that, in fact, the administration could do everything that is in the DHS memo because the deferred action is a process that exists that anybody could apply for, that the regulations since 1981 have allowed for individuals to request deferred action and, again, if they meet economic necessity, be able to apply for work authorization. And she noted that, and the Texas lawyer basically agreed that Texas is okay with undocumented immigrants continuing and remaining in the United States as long as they don't obtain work authorization, as long as they don't obtain a Social Security number and pay more taxes. That is completely nonsensical. It is not good for our country. It's not good for our economy, national security, and most importantly, it's not good for the immigrants, the four to five million immigrants who would directly benefit from this and their 5 million U.S. citizen children. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Mary Elena. A couple more points I just want to make based on our survey, and then I'll turn it over to the operator for any questions you all have. We also found that average wages of DACA recipients rose by 45%, with more than two in three people getting better-paying jobs. And specifically with respect to Texas, that speaking to Texas's claim of economic harm by DAPA, in challenging DAPA, Texas didn't take into account any of the added tax revenue that would accrue from recipients who earned higher wages and pay more in taxes. Our results show that one in five DACA recipients nationwide and one in three in Texas are buying cars, bringing in an average of $647 in sales tax per car for Texas. So these results are further proof of the economic impact of deferred actions, positive economic impact of deferred actions, and add only more evidence to the need for the DACA expansion and DAPA programs to move forward. So with that, let me open it up for questions and remind the participants on the call that in addition to our speakers, we have Philip Wogan, Associate Director for Immigration Policy at CAP, here available to discuss analysis of the survey. And I believe the congressman might have to leave the call early, so if anyone has a question specifically for him, you might want to get that in on the early side of the question and answer period. So with that, I'll turn it over to the operator.
Thank you very much. And for the members of our telephone audience, if you would like to ask a question today, you can do so by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you are using a speakerphone, please ensure that your mute function is off so we can receive your signal. Once again, that is star 1 for a phone question. We'll pause one moment as we assemble our roster. Our first question today will come from Emily Kadai with Newsweek.
Paul, I had a question for Congressman Castro on DAPA and DACA, and also on a case that I know that he's been watching, or a situation he's been watching on the detention of women and children in Texas. Today you're lauding the administration's policies. A couple weeks ago you were very critical of them. I'm wondering if some of these deportation and detention policies sort of outweigh any gains that have been made by undocumented immigrants that have been allowed to stay in the country because of DACA and DAPA.
Hi there, this is Erin Hatch. I'm Congressman Castro's press secretary. He unfortunately had to step out and catch his flight back to San Antonio.
Oh, okay.
Please do. I can provide you with my email address if you don't already have it. And I'll be glad to get answers for these questions to you.
Okay. Maybe then can I follow up with Mary Elena? I just wanted to get her sense of sort of where the court process is likely to play out from here, if there's any more clarity based on the judge's questionings today in terms of how this might play out.
Sure. I think, you know, it's always hard to speculate. As a lawyer, I always try to refrain from that about what the next steps are and how the court might decide based on the questioning. So I think there are a couple of things that, in terms of scenarios, one is this panel could issue a decision that is focused, that addresses both the substantive and constitutional issues before it, which then, if they rule against the administration, would make it a lot easier for the administration then to appeal that directly to the Supreme Court, which is definitely what we would urge if there's a loss. On the other hand, if Texas and the 25 other states lose, they are probably more likely to appeal and seek en banc review to the full Fifth Circuit, and then depending on the outcome of that en banc review, either losing party also would probably appeal to the Supreme Court. So this is most likely going to end up at the Supreme Court. The national significance of the case, the importance of it, is, and the legal issues before the courts, are there. I think from this particular hearing, again, regardless of where this panel, how this panel rules and whether they rule on the right side of history, on the right side of the law, we're pretty confident at the National Immigration Law Center. I think as the congressman said, that implementation is inevitable. Our movement is growing stronger and more powerful. And this will play a role in the 2016 elections as well. So, this is an issue that's not going away anytime soon.
Okay. Thank you.
Next, we'll take a question from Swingman Kim with Politico.
Hello? Hello? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to make sure. Sorry, my phone's being weird. Hi. A question for you, Marielena, since you were in the courtroom. I was actually curious during the oral arguments whether the issue with the mistakenly issued permits that's been kind of playing out in fact still back in Brownsville, and Hayden has called Jay Johnson to court. Did that issue come up at all during the oral arguments? And also, do you see that being a problem with the broader legal case?
It did come up, but it came up mostly just about scheduling, honestly. Towards the end of the hearing, Judge Smith asked both Texas and the Department of Justice kind of what was left to be done at the district court level and what's the state of play there. And both parties talked about the fact that there is limited discovery and the issue around the work authorizations that the administration is following up on, and there's a meet and confer scheduled for the end of July on that. Mm-hmm. So that was basically just to the extent it was really more from a scheduling perspective. And I think one thing to imply from that is that this panel of judges is really trying to understand the fullness of the case and whether they rule in a limited way that then ends up having the case go back to Judge Hayden to address merits issues, or whether they have a much more a decision that's much more on the law that doesn't require it to go back to Judge Hayden.
Okay, all right. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question today, you can do so by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. Our next question will come from Alvaro Ortiz, Houston Chronicle.
Hello. Thanks for your time today. This is a question from Ms. Incapié, and before I forget, I'd like to ask her if she can respond in Spanish. Would that be okay with you?
Sure. Claro que sí.
Okay. Bueno, muchas gracias por su tiempo, como siempre. Es una pregunta con cuatro partes, pero son muy concretas. No es una pregunta para una respuesta muy larga. Primero,
okay.
¿Cuáles son, ya que usted ha tenido la oportunidad de estar en persona en la audiencia, le quiero preguntar cuáles, en su opinión, han sido los puntos fuertes y también los puntos más débiles de los argumentos de las dos partes, es decir, de los estados demandantes y del Departamento de Justicia? También le quiero preguntar, y le pido perdón por mi ignorancia, si va a haber más audiencias de este panel o las dos que ha habido hoy son las únicas que se van a celebrar. Y mi última pregunta tiene que ver, sé que es muy complicado especular con cuándo puede haber una decisión, pero si tiene alguna algún comentario que hacer a propósito de cuándo de nuevo el panel podría emitir algún tipo de decisión, si quizás podría ser en lo que queda del mes de julio, o bueno, qué información puede aportar sobre eso.
Ok, claro. Y Álvaro, dadas que son cuatro preguntas, voy a tratar de contestarte brevemente, pero si quieres podemos hablar por teléfono después también. A ver, respecto a los argumentos, voy a comenzar con el estado de Texas. Los argumentos más fuertes de Texas, yo diría que se enfocan más que todo en la parte de la discreción que tiene el gobierno federal con el cómo se implementa un programa de la manera... si es una manera de discreción o si es más que todo obligatoria, dado los comentarios que se han hecho tanto por el presidente como por la administración con respecto a, estamos hablando de 4 a 5 millones de personas que serían elegibles para la acción diferida. Y es con la acción diferida las personas pueden aplicar, solicitar un permiso de trabajo, y con ese permiso de trabajo van a ver algunos beneficios estatales. Entonces, ahí es donde viene el argumento de ellos de parte con la, desde el punto de vista del costo o supuestamente desde nuestra perspectiva, desde el beneficio. La parte de Texas es de, como mencioné antes, en realidad parece que no entienden que la acción diferida no proporciona ningún beneficio obligatorio para el Estado. Todos los beneficios que vienen con la acción diferida son a consecuencia de otros estatutos o reglamentos federales o estatales. La persona tiene que recibir acción diferida puede solicitar, bajo los reglamentos que existen desde los 80, un permiso de trabajo. Y ya teniendo un permiso de trabajo, por ley puede solicitar un número de seguro social. Y de ahí, consecuentemente, vienen otros beneficios, pero no es nada nuevo que ha hecho el presidente. Entonces, ahí yo creo donde la debilidad del argumento del Departamento de Justicia. Por el lado de Texas, perdón. Por el lado del Departamento de Justicia, yo diría que su punto es el reverso, ¿verdad? Su punto más fuerte es el hecho de que la acción diferida es algo que existe ya hace décadas, que el presidente no cambió la ley de ninguna manera y simplemente está aclarando cuál es el criterio y cuál es el proceso por el cual las personas pueden solicitar afirmativamente. De la parte débil, diría yo que, francamente, es la parte complicada de lo que ha pasado con respecto a, en las pocas semanas después de que DAPA fue donde la decisión del juez Hayne en febrero, cuando los permisos de trabajo para personas con DACA fueron otorgados por 3 años y esas, más que todo lo que pasó prácticamente en la parte práctica de la implementación con respecto a esa ventanilla en febrero. En cuestión de más audiencias, este panel ya debe de finalizar su trabajo, su fallo. El fallo puede ser cuestión de semanas o puede ser meses. No hay ninguna manera de saber exactamente cuándo. Por un lado, el hecho de que dos de los jueces son los mismos que escucharon los argumentos en abril, esperamos que puedan tomar una decisión mucho más rápido. Gracias. Thank you.
And as a reminder, it is *1 on your telephone keypad to ask a question. We'll pause one moment as we await additional responses. And at this time, we have no questions in the queue. I will turn the call back over to Carmel for any additional or closing remarks.
Well, if there's no other questions, just want to thank all of those who listened in and thank our participants for joining us today.
Great, and, thank you.
Our survey is on the American Progress website, so urge you all to go to AmericanProgress.org and take a look. Thank you very much.
And that does conclude today's conference call. Thank you for your participation.